What is up, and welcome back to another edition of the Wizards Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Finberg, and it's good to be back. I'm really excited about what's upcoming for this team. There's a lot on tap, and the podcast has returned. We took a brief hiatus. Like I said in my last episode, again, there's nothing that really happens during August, and really not much that happens until very late September. It's kind of a really lull 2 months for the NBA and for the Wizards. And I don't want to produce any content that, I didn't really want to do, because if I don't want to do it and I don't think it'll be fun or interesting, then I don't think my listeners would either. So took a brief break, but we're back. I mean, last season, I started this pod in October, and I did 1 to 2, usually 2 episodes per week. This is episode 50. Pretty big accomplishment for me that I'm really excited about. And I want to take time in the beginning to thank everyone for listening. The growth of this podcast over the last year has been mind-blowing to me. I mean, never did I think that there would be 400, 500, 600 people listening to my thoughts on this team, on the Wizards. So again, it doesn't go unnoticed. I truly do appreciate the support. I appreciate everybody that enjoys listening to what I have to say. But I don't want to bore you with my thank yous. I want to get into this episode. I want to get into what I want to discuss today. And without a lot going on, I wanted to put together a pod that really touches on some of the things that I've been thinking about for the Wizards this season. And that's some pressing questions. My biggest questions, I'd say, for the Wizards entering this season, and not only my biggest, but I think a lot of Wizards fans' biggest questions entering this season as well. I've got 8 of them here. I don't know if I'm going to get to all of them. I don't know how long I'm going to take answering each. But I just took the time to list out, what are the unknowns? What are Wizards fans looking forward to? What do they want to see from certain players? Who's going to get dealt? Who's in the starting five? I feel like all these questions would be good to answer, before training camp, before everything kind of starts to unfold. Just to kind of set the precedent, like this is what a lot of people are looking into for the season, and this is what I think will happen or be the outcome. So to get right into it, my first question has to do with Alex Saar. I mean, as some people probably expected, this is probably the biggest storyline entering this year for the Wizards. It's will Alex Saar not only live up to the hype, but will he silence the doubters that have come along after his poor summer league performance? If you don't remember, because it happened, 2 months ago, Alex Saar's summer league was definitely one to forget. Had an 0 of 15 shooting performance, 0 points, like 2 or 3 rebounds that game. It was one of the worst possible showings he could have had. And to follow that up in the next couple of games, he really didn't do much offensively. So when you break it down, yeah, he had a really bad summer league. But look, he's still the number 2 overall pick, seen by a lot as a rookie of the year favorite, before his summer league performance, seen by a lot of people before the draft as the top prospect. And yeah, he had a bad summer league. But it's a clean slate. He's playing against NBA comp now, which is a lot more challenging. So will he live up to the hype? Again, I think you have to define what the hype is for Alex Saar. For me, it's is he going to be a solid rim protecting big that can guard, pretty much, I wouldn't say 1 through 5, but like 2 through 5 with his wingspan, his athleticism, on the perimeter. Can he get out on the run and run the floor like I hope he can? And then offensively, can he show something? Can he show you that if he gets the ball in a, advantageous position down low, is he going to be able to do something with it? Or is he just going to catch the ball and throw it right back out to one of his teammates because he has no confidence in his game? Is he going to have any type of post moves whatsoever because he didn't show any in summer league? The jump shot, is he going to actually take it with confidence, or is his confidence shattered after summer league and he's just not going to shoot? There's a lot of things that go into it, but to me, Alex Saar living up to the hype would be a very good defensive season, not elite, but very good, and at least a promising change offensively to say, look, yeah, I'm not there yet, and I still got a lot of time, but But the foundation is there, and I can show that I can at least hold my own when we're playing, when we're playing. And for me, that is what I would look for to be a living up to the hype moment. I don't, he doesn't need to win Rookie of the Year. I don't really think that award matters. And I think there's a lot of people in better positions, in better situations, that will probably beat him out for it. But if you're asking me, will he live up to the hype? Look, and this is, I feel like this is a little skewed, but or biased, but I think he will. I think he will live up to, I would say this, I think he'll live up to my standards that I set. I think to rational Wizards fans that understand or understood at the time what they were getting in Alex Saar, you know, a long-term project offensively, good defensively, but still ways to go there as well. I think for those rationalized fans, he will. But for the fair weather fans that are from an outsider's perspective and just see he's the second pick and he's not putting up 20 and 10 in year one or even 15 and 7 in year one, he's a bust. He's terrible. He's Kwame Brown. And I think you're going to see a lot of that discourse throughout the season, which is unfortunate. But again, it's the state of the NBA. A lot of people aren't tuned into this team, rightfully so, I guess, because they aren't good and they won't be good for a bit. And I think you're going to see a lot of those people that won't watch the first 25, 30 games. They're going to see Alex Saar is averaging like what, 7 or 8 points, maybe 5 or 6 rebounds. And they're going to say, oh my God, he sucks. How did they take him number two? And you just got to kind of throw those thoughts away because those opinions mean nothing. You know, I feel like it's going to be a rookie season where if you're watching Alex Saar play and you're seeing how he affects the game, you'll be like, okay, he's a pretty solid player. He's got a long way to go, but he's promising. I can see why they took him number two. But if you're not and you're just a, you know, a stat sheet or a box score watcher and you're looking at it from an outsider's view, you don't watch him play, I think you would say no, he didn't live up to the hype. So I think this is going to be a polarizing debate throughout the year. But like I said, I'm inclined to say he's going to, and that's my hype. That's my expectations. People listening to this probably have different expectations. Maybe they think you should be a lot better. They think you should start. They think you should play a lot. But in terms of my expectations, living up to the hype, I think he will meet that. So that's Alex Saar. The second one, and I don't want to start with Kyle Kuzma because I feel like I talk about this guy in trade rumors every episode, and I wouldn't say it's tired, but again, I don't want to just harp on the same exact point because it's not just been during my podcast era. I've been doing this pod, like I said, for a year, and Kuz has been in trade rumors the second he touched down in DC. So does Kyle Kuzma get traded? That's the question here. The written one that I have is, does Kyle Kuzma get traded? Again, I have maintained this stance on Kyle Kuzma in trade rumors for as long as I can remember, definitely over the last year of doing this pod. I think the Wizards should 100% be accepting phone calls, exploring avenues to trade Kyle Kuzma, because I think it's inevitable. I think ultimately, when it's all said and done, Kyle Kuzma within the next 2 to 3 years will not be wearing a Wizards uniform. I think it has to do with timeline and the fact that Kuz is nearly 30. I think it has to do with skill set and where Kuz kind of wants to be the number one guy in this rebuild, and I don't think he is. I think he's a three or a four on a championship team. I think that's been pretty evident in his play as the number one option compared to his play, even as the number two or three option in DC, and how it's a better served role for him as one of those secondary playmakers and scorers instead of the guy. And I also think he wants to win. You know, you can only lose for so long before getting frustrated, before saying, all right, I kind of want to get traded to a contender and try to make a run. He had a chance last year, and I respect the fact that he said, look, I could go to Dallas and maybe win a ring, but again, I don't want to. I like where I am at DC. And I respect that. But at a certain point, once you start, you know, losing 60 plus games back to back to back to back years, it weighs on a player. And for a guy like Kuzma, who already won a ring, I'm sure he's chasing that feeling of, wow, we beat everyone in the NBA, and people are going to say it's a Mickey Mouse ring because it was 2020, but whatever. He won a ring. But what my point has been is he won a ring as a fifth, sixth option on that team. You could argue fourth, but I don't even think so. And so that's my point. He's now the number one on the Wizards. So it's easy to see why that doesn't work long term. I think, like I said, Kyle Kuzma is a perfect trade asset. He's on a phenomenal contract. He's making $23 million this year, $19 million the next year, and then he's an unrestricted free agent. For a player of his caliber that's won a ring, that averages 20 points a game, that can shoot the ball, that is great size at 6'10", he is the ideal wing, the ideal wing scorer for a team. I'm hesitant to say 3-and-D wing because I think I've seen his buy-in defensively, but not lately. I know he can do it, but I wouldn't bank on getting a great defender if I traded for Kyle Kuzma. But I do think the size, the scoring ability is perfectly suited for a third, fourth option on a championship team. I mentioned teams like the Lakers, the Kings, even a team like the Grizzlies could make sense as well. You know, he's a perfect fit for a lot of squads. And so I think I would say he starts the season in DC 100%. And by that deadline, again, I don't think he gets traded. And I say this because I don't see why it's different this year versus last year. What, he's just making $3 million less this year, and he's a year more into his deal. He's a year older. I mean, look, the Wizards are going to try. I mean, you saw they had a deal in the works to send him to the Mavericks. It's not like they're like, well, we need to hold on to Kyle Kuzma. But I think Kyle Kuzma wants to hold on to this number one option. I think he wants to be the guy in DC. My concern there is I don't think he's the guy. I don't think he'll ever be the guy. I don't think his game is like that. And especially, I mean, if the Wizards gave up on Denny because he was too old and didn't fit their timeline at 22 years old, Kyle Kuzma is 29. He's getting close to 30. So please don't expect him to be here for the long haul. And while my answer to this question of does he get traded this year is no, I think they try to, but I don't think they find the two firsts they're looking for. They seem pretty stubborn in that. I think he stays on, and then I think once next year hits, the Wizards are kind of, I wouldn't say in panic mode, but they got to capitalize. You can't do another Tyus Jones thing where you want to get a first round pick, in this case two first round picks. You don't get it, and you say, well, we're not going to settle for anything less, and we're going to let him walk. I think the pressure is on the Wizards, not this year, but the next year, when Kuz is making under 20 million. He's 30 years old. He's a perfect trade deadline asset for a lot of teams on an expiring deal. And the Wizards, if you don't trade him then, you're not going to trade him at all because he's going to walk. So again, I think this year the pressure's not on to make a deal. And I don't think they're going to. But if you ask me a year, if we're a year in the future into the following season, and you ask me, I would say I would probably be about 70, 80% sure that he'd get dealt. So again, my answer to that question is no. I think Kyle Kuzma stays throughout the season. So here's the third question, and one that I answered, I think in July, on my pod. It's who do I think will be the opening night starting five? And I think I need to revisit this because a lot has happened. I mean, we watched Summer League, free agency happened. We had some signings here and there. Eugene Omorui gets cut. I mean, he wasn't starting anyway. I don't know why I said that, but some stuff has happened in that time frame. And I've come to the with similar conclusion, I think, after looking at all the data and the information presented in front of me. I think the starting five that makes the most sense against Boston on the 24th is Jordan Poole at point guard, Malcolm Brogdon at shooting guard, and then you look at who starts out at the forward positions. You could do Corey Kispert, you could, but I'm not going to. You could do Alex Sarr, I'm not going to. I think Bilal Coulibaly at the three is a lock. Honestly, I would rather Bilal start at the three and Jordan Poole come off the bench than Jordan Poole start and Bilal come off the bench. Bilal is your centerpiece. He is your guy. I'm not saying he's the guy, but he is the best young player on this team. And to sit here and say we need to start Corey Kispert over him, or we need to start Kyle Kuzma at the three just so we can make sure Alex Sarr starts at the four, I don't think that makes sense. I think Bilal Coulibaly must start. I think he's going to as well. So I would have Poole, Brogdon, Bilal. I'd have Kuz at the four and JV at the five. I think this is a lineup that makes the most sense timeline-wise. in terms of you have, you know, some guys in there that you're shopping and you want you probably want to trade in some point in the near future. But you have some young guys in there as well. You have Bilal. Jordan Poole is still a young player. But look, you're looking to go to other teams and say, Malcolm Brogdon's having a really solid season. He's only 31. He's shooting 40% from three. You need a backup point guard. Same with Valanciunas. He's one of the most consistent big men in the league. Great rebounder. Decent defender. Can shoot the ball and stretch the floor on offense. Great offensive rebounder. Look how well he's playing in our system. Imagine him playing in your system on a championship or a contending team. Same goes for Kuzma as well. So I think it's the right combination of playing some of your own guys and also playing some solid NBA players that you're probably looking to shop and kind of vet for what they can get around the league. So I think that's a starting five. And look, Corey Kispert starting. Would I be mad if Corey Kispert started the three over Bilal? I would be. Because I don't think Corey Kispert is that much better. I do think Corey Kispert is better offensively, and I don't think anybody can argue that. But what Bilal brings on defense, that ability to, I wouldn't say take away the opposing team's best player, but at least make it difficult on them, I think that's essential in a starting lineup. You had it with Denny, you traded him. I think you need someone else to fill that role, and I think Bilal can perfectly step up now with Denny gone and become that premier defender in that starting five. In terms of Sarr, look, getting picked second overall does not mean you need to start right away. Even if we took Sarr number one overall, again, it doesn't mean you need to start him right away. He's not ready. He's still 19, and look, he's raw. Offensively, he's got a long ways to go. And I feel like it would be unfair to throw him out there with four guys that are pretty seasoned NBA players in Poole, Brogdon, Kuzma, and Valanciunas, and just say, go get it. Because I think it's going to be a detriment to the team. People are going to sag off him offensively. They're going to be able to double team, over help on certain guys like Kuz and Poole. In the paint, it's like, I'm not respecting your post game. Go ahead, pass it to Alex Sarr. He's going to pass it right out. And I think he needs some time to develop, watch JV play. And then if you trade JV or Kuz at the deadline, then Alex Sarr can pretty seamlessly step in. And hopefully in that second half, you can kind of see why the Wizards took him. But look, it's going to take time for Sarr. And I think that starting five of Poole, Brogdon, Bilal, Kuz, and JV gives you the best chance to win. And I know a lot of people listening are going to say, well, you don't want to win. You want Cooper Flagg. Yes, but you can't just go out here and if the Wizards' goal was really to just be like, we don't care if you know we're tanking, we're going to tank, they would just start Jalen Noel and Anthony Gill and re-sign Omer Rui and play him at the four. No, they fuck it. They'd put me in at the one. If they really wanted to be the worst team in the league, they do. I would assume it's probably in the cards to be, to not be that great this year. But you can't just go out there and put out the worst possible lineup and, pretty openly say we're trying to lose every game. That's unfair to the players. It's unfair to the people in the organization, the staffers, the front office. It's unfair to do that. And so, look, they're going to try to win every game possible. And I think by design, their roster isn't good enough to win a lot of games, but they're going to put the best team on the floor every night. And I think those five in that starting group give the team the best chance to win. And that's why I think that'll be your opening night starting five. And now, while I will say this, while I think I'm probably shooting like 10% on my predictions over the course of this pod, I have gotten the starting five right each of the last 2 years. I predicted that Denny would start opening night against Indiana 2 years ago, and that was a pretty surprising thing for a lot of people, but he did, and he was great. I got the starting five right last year as well, and I don't think that was too difficult. I'm not trying to glaze myself, but I will say if I'm good at anything in terms of these predictions, it's probably the starting five, and I think that is the group I would go for. So that's the third question, and again, I don't know if I'm going to get through all of these, but I have eight here. So this is the halfway point. And it's how many first round picks do I think the Wizards could get combined between Brogdon and Valanciunas? So that's to say, if the Wizards decided to deal both of them, how many first round picks do I think they could get? And my answer is one. A lot of people might say two, one and one. But look, if you look at last year, I think Tyus Jones versus Malcolm Brogdon is a good, talking point, because I think Tyus Jones is better. He's younger. I think he's a better passer. He doesn't turn the ball over. He, I mean, leads the league last 5 years in assist to turnover ratio. He's the perfect backup point guard. And if Tyus Jones at his peak could not get a first round pick from a contender, Malcolm Brogdon, no matter how well he plays, is not going to do that for you. I think a multitude of second round picks, maybe three or four, and salary could work for Brogdon. I think that's most likely what you're going to get. But in terms of first round picks, I think Valanciunas is the only one of these two that can net that. And I just think that because I think backup bigs are a little more important, and Valanciunas, he could easily start on contending teams. I mean, he started on the Pels last year, and they were in the playoffs. So I think Valanciunas is a lot of a better fit on some teams than Brogdon. And I think he warrants and nets a lot more. The team that I've had circled for Val is LA, the Lakers, because he was really high up on their board. LeBron said it at USA Basketball Camp that they wanted to sign him. He signs a very cheap deal with the Wizards. I mean, three years, $30 million. He's making 9 point, I think 9.1 this year. So a very cheap deal, very easily tradable deal. And I think that the Lakers, could give up that 2029 first round pick. And I know I'm being very particular in this, and that's okay, but that is what I think is going to happen. And even a team, in the West that's contending and needs a backup big, like a lot of teams have a lot of picks, and a lot of teams could use a backup big that realistically could be their starting big. And on a cheap deal like Val is on, I think it would make sense. So I think one is the answer there. And that's a pretty short answer. I'm not going to dive too deep into it. It's pretty basic. I don't think they'll get one for Brogdon. I think they'll get a first round pick for Valanciunas. Especially because the Wizards don't have to move Valanciunas. 3 year, $10 million deal. They can keep him. They can have Sar learn and grow under him and eventually move him. So I think a team might have to entice the Wizards to move off that contract a little earlier than they need to. And that's why I think they'll get it first. Question number five. Does Corey Kispert sign an extension before the October 21st deadline? And if so, or if not, does he get dealt this season? This is a multi-layer question, because I think the second part really has to do with the first part. And the first part being, does he sign an extension? I'm inclined to say yes. And I'm inclined to say yes because of the history of Will Dawkins and Michael Winger, the short history at that. But they were in the exact same boat last year. Denny Avdia, he showed signs of having a breakout year, but didn't have one yet. And the Wizards were in a weird spot where, do we give him a contract now and hope that he rewards us with a great year and then we have a bargain deal? Or do we let him play it out, and then if he has a breakout year, we pay him, a lot more than we would have. And if he doesn't, then we pay him less, but that sucks because our player that we wanted to do good didn't do good. And the Wizards played it perfectly, gave him a really cheap deal, and Denny was unbelievable. And so I think they kind of want to replicate that level of success with Corey. I don't think his contract's going to be as big, because I think Denny's a two-way player that could develop into literally anything. Whereas Corey is a little bit more limited, and I don't think he'll be a star. I don't think he'll be a top three player on a team, but I think he's going to be a very good fourth or fifth option, a very good role player. And so I think a 4 year, $44 million deal, or like a 3 year, $35 million deal, I think that makes sense, around 10 to 11 per season for Corey. Denny was making around 12 to 13. So that makes sense to me. And it's just up to Corey Kispert to say, if I don't sign this and I play it out, how much can I get on the open market? And I think what Corey would have to evaluate or put into that decision of, if I do not sign an extension, is if I don't sign an extension and I'm an unrestricted free agent at the end of the year, it's pretty possible that this team moves on from me at the deadline. I mean, expiring contract, great shooter, good size. That is a perfect player on a lot of contending teams, especially on the rookie deal that he's on now. It makes sense. And so I think Corey Kispert signing an extension obviously means he's not going to get traded. He's here for the long haul, at least for the next couple years. And I think that would be the best move for the Wizards. However, let's say we get to October 21st. The day passes, no extension signed. He's going to play out the final year of his rookie deal and then test free agency, restricted free agency at that, but free agency. I think, look, if a team like Boston says, I will give you a first round pick for Corey Kispert at the deadline, the Wizards have to take it. I think they do. Because Corey Kispert didn't sign that extension. And if the Celtics want to trade for him, he's probably having a good year. You don't want to give Corey Kispert too big of a deal in the offseason. And if that's the case, you could just take that pick and be like, okay, I want to try to draft another Corey Kispert, a decent, a solid shooter that can hold his own on both ends. I'd rather have another crack at doing that and not have to worry about giving this guy a deal for the next 4 years than give Corey Kispert a 4 year, $50+ million contract that I don't necessarily feel comfortable giving him. So look, that's why I think there's two possible routes. I think he gets extended. He's here for the next couple of years, no trade. But I think if he doesn't get extended, I'd be inclined to say it's more likely than not that by February, Corey Kispert is on a new team. And that's my stance on it. There's not much else to say on that matter. It's a matter of does this deal get done? I think it does, based on prior history with what they did with Denny. I think it would be smart to get a deal done. Because even if you do, you could still trade him at the deadline. It's not like there's like a, oh, you just signed him, that's messed up to then trade him. No, you can definitely trade him. So I think to keep your options open, it just makes sense to just give him the deal. Number six on this list. Will Johnny Davis get meaningful minutes? And this is a personal question for me. As a Johnny Davis truther, as somebody that refuses to give up Johnny Davis stock, I will admit it is getting very difficult. It is getting very difficult to hold on to my Johnny Davis stock, in part because I do think if given the opportunity, he could showcase a little bit of what he can do. My biggest concern is that he won't get that opportunity. Is that we'll see what we've seen in the last couple of years, where maybe he'll get spot minutes if people go down due to injury. In blowouts, which the Wizards are always on the opposite end of, the wrong end, he will get minutes in garbage time, but he won't really get a meaningful opportunity to showcase whatever it is that he can do on a basketball court. And I wouldn't say it's unfair to Davis. I think it's been a tough upbringing in the NBA for him. It's been struggle filled, but again, I don't think he's really gotten a chance. And look, that's not for me to say that in his limited opportunities, he's proven he deserves a chance. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying I'd like to see 10 games of Johnny Davis, not even starting, but playing like 20 plus minutes a game consistently. And I'd like to see if in year three, Johnny Davis can be that defensive guard that the Wizards have hoped and at least hold his own on offense. Because, I mean, you saw he played like 20 minutes in that game at Minnesota last year. 3 of 3 from three, and all three threes were cash. They didn't even touch the rim. And he was great on defense, and the Wizards played a very solid game. They lost, but they played a very solid game. And then you look at some of the other games where he's playing like 2 or 3 minutes in like the first quarter, and you're like, oh, let's go. Let's see what he can do. And then benched. Doesn't play the rest of the game. Doesn't get a chance to even show out or show what he can do. I know a lot of people are saying he doesn't deserve that opportunity because he's played so bad in his minutes. But I think he does. I think before you make your last judgment on him, he needs to at least have an opportunity. And at the least, you can say if he doesn't play well, okay, he isn't good. He's not a part of this future, but at least we know. At least we are fully sure and certain that Johnny Davis isn't the player that we thought he would be when we drafted him at number 10. But I think that opportunity needs to be given. I think the Wizards being bad this year will help. But again, I could see a path where Johnny Davis gets hid behind some of the guards on this team. I mean, you have Jordan Poole and Brogdon presumably starting. I don't know where they're gonna play Bilal. If they play him at the two, they could easily put Corey Kispert in a role like that. You have a guy like Sadiq Bey that I don't know if he'll play this year, but could very easily return. He's more of a forward, but could play guard. Obviously, you have Jared Butler Jr., who will probably be that backup point guard. You just signed Jalen Noel, who I honestly think is, not honestly, I definitely think is a better NBA player than Johnny Davis. He could easily make the team. Kira Lewis Jr. is another training camp invite that could make the team. there's a lot going on at the guard position. Not even to mention, you traded Denny Avdia for Bob Carrington, who I think will be your backup two guard this year. And so where does that leave Johnny Davis? If you guess that you have Jordan Poole and Jared Butler as your point guards, you have Malcolm Brogdon and Bob Carrington as your two guards. Keyshawn George, albeit at 6'7", could also play in that role. Where does that leave a guy like Johnny Davis? Not drafted by the current front office, hasn't really showed anything in terms of why he should be playing. Where does that leave him? And that's where my concerns go, where again, I couldn't even fault the Wizards for just saying, look, if you get minutes and in some capacity and you show, okay, this guy's good, then good for you. But we're not going to go out of our way because you didn't get drafted here. And we're kind of focused on the guys we took and the timeline that we've built instead of the timeline that Tommy Shepard left us with. And I think that kind of leaves Johnny Davis as that 14th, 15th guy, fringe roster guy. And even if he makes it, I don't know if he plays. So that's my consensus on Johnny is I think he might get lost in the shuffle, and you really won't get to see much of him this year. I hope not. I hope we see a lot of him, but that's my consensus there. Moving on, honestly, I'm on question seven. I'm just gonna get through all eight. Why not? I think I owe it to you because I haven't done a pod in about 3 or 4 weeks. But it's beside the point. Question number seven: who's the odd man out down below between Marvin Bagley and Rashawn Holmes? And this is something that I feel like has gone under the radar in terms of when they signed Valanciunas, he's pretty clearly that starting five. And then you look at Kyle Kuzma, who's pretty clearly your starting four. You're not gonna just not play Alex Sarr, so he's gonna play the four. And then you got to kind of analyze what are we doing to back up Valanciunas? Is it Bagley, and you kind of play a little bit small? Or is it Holmes and you're still playing a little small, but he's the more traditional big, the more traditional center, I should say. Because I view Bagley as more of a power forward. And while I think Bagley is better, obviously, offensively and adds a little bit more there, I think he's pretty atrocious on defense. I think Rashawn Holmes isn't a terrific defender, but he brings some size, some strength down low. He brings some energy, definitely. He plays like Trez to me. If you remember Montrezl Harrell from the 2021 10-3 start Wizards that everyone thought was going to make the playoffs, they play pretty similar. Really good energy. Pretty similar builds in terms of they're not like 7'1". They're like 6'10", 6'11", and they're strong, and they're going to kind of impose their will down low. And again, like bring that energy, and that's why I kind of view them together. And I think Marvin Bagley is more of a four, and that's why I'd go with Holmes as that backup big. So look, I don't think Bagley is completely out of the rotation. And again, I think it's a little unfair because he's definitely a lot better than Alex Sarr is right now. But Alex Sarr got drafted number two. They're not gonna just say you're not playing for the first 15 games so that we can maybe get a second round pick for Marvin Bagley. It's not worth it. I think Marvin Bagley is the odd man out there. And I think it just has to do with Holmes being the more traditional center, and the better option to back up a guy like Valanciunas, than a guy like Marvin Bagley. And I could be wrong there. They played Bagley a lot at the center last year, but again, I just don't like him in that role. I like him as a four, and so I'd prefer Holmes. And number eight, and this is more of a long-term question, and one that I can't really answer today, but it's is Brian Keefe the answer at head coach? Again, I don't think we'll be able to answer that this season. I think we'll be able to be skewing one way or the other, but give the man some time. I mean, 20 plus years as an assistant, it's a big step up to be head coach. What I'm confident in and what I like is that they gave him enough time last year, pretty much half the season, to get used to it, to get acclimated to it, to be in that role, to be in that leadership position, to get acclimated with his players as the guy. And I think that helps. And I think I like that they picked up Wes Unseld Jr.'s, fourth year option. Bad move, but they were like, okay, bad move. We're only halfway into it. Let's cut our losses now and let's not harp on it. Give Brian Keefe some run, and then maybe if he's good, we'll sign him full time. That's what happened. And look, I think he's gonna do a great job. He's a good player development guy, very well liked and respected by all the players. If you listen to exit interviews last year, I mean, just they were so high. There was such high praise for Brian Keefe, not only the coach, but the person, the communicator, the player development guy as well. And I think that respect level is huge going into what's going to be a long and tough season. I think to have that locker room behind you, no matter if you're winning a lot or losing a lot, that's important. And I think Brian Keefe is the right man in terms of that. Look, X's and O's wise and wins and losses. If you're analyzing Brian Keefe on wins and losses, then you need to stop. You need to just stop your coaching analysis, honestly, forever. Because Brian Keefe could win zero games, and I honestly wouldn't care. Because I'm not looking at wins and losses. I'm looking at, are the players on this team that matter? Are the players that are going to be here for the long haul, are they getting progressively better? And if they're not, then we have an issue. But if you saw even last year, Bilal from the beginning to the end, a guy like Jordan Poole under Brian Keefe versus under Wes Unseld Jr., again, night and day. So look, I'm confident in Brian Keefe. I think he's going to do a great job. But I do think it is a question. Is he the answer? And like I said, that's not a question that people or fans or even the front office will be able to answer after 1 year, even 2 years, to be honest. But you'll get a better sense of that, obviously, as the years go on. But again, I'm confident in what he's going to bring to the table. I'm glad he got the role because I think he deserved at least a shot with what we saw from the improvement in the beginning to the end of last season. But again, that's going to do it. Those are the eight most pressing questions that I'm looking at. I hope this was a fun episode. I'm trying to find some stuff to talk about. This is hopefully the last time that I'm going to have to figure something out to discuss. Usually, the stuff is presented in front of me by just everyday events with the team. And obviously, it's easier to do stuff when the team's actually playing games instead of doing what I'm doing and just waiting for the season to start. So obviously, once the season starts, episodes are going to get picked up. We're going to do our usual, 1 to 2 episodes per week, recapping 2 to 3 games. And that's kind of going to be how we're going to go about it this year, pretty similar to last year. But I will say I'm pretty confident that I'm going to be at Media Day, which is the 30th of September. So not this upcoming Monday, but the next Monday will be Media Day. So that'll be a lot of fun if I'm there. If that's the case, follow along on my Twitter. I'll have all the coverage, all the tweets from all the players and what they're saying heading into the season. What I would call pretty much year one of the rebuild. I think last year was year zero. But just set a timeline. Media Day is the 30th of September, and then right after that, the next day is when training camp starts. And you saw guys like Jalen Noel, Kira Lewis Jr., Leaky Black. Those were a couple of the camp invites, plus the guys that you already know on the roster, and maybe some others as well that they signed. And so that's going to be the first, I think the 4th of October, or maybe no, October 6th is the first game of the preseason. The Wizards are playing some Montreal game in Montreal against the Raptors. And then I think they have three or four other preseason games, which I don't think a lot of people listening probably care about except me. And then that's when the season starts on the 24th against Boston. And then the Wizards go from there. So, it's picking up, and there's going to be a lot more for me to discuss. But again, I hope this was a fun episode. At least gives you something to listen to, Wizards wise, to get you updated and caught up to date on some of the most pressing questions entering this year. But again, that's going to do it. This is the 50th episode. I mentioned this in the beginning. Again, I want to say thank you to everyone that's listening. The growth of this podcast from October of last year until now, getting 50 episodes within that time frame. That's, by October, that'll be more than one episode per week. I'm very happy and proud of myself with the growth of it, but I also know it wouldn't be possible without all you guys listening, supporting me. There's a lot of people that have DM'd me and said that this is their favorite podcast and that I keep them up to date. And that just that warms my heart. That makes me very happy because that's the goal of this pod. To provide an outlet for Wizards fans to listen to Wizards-centric talk, because I think this department is lacking. There's a lot of great Wizards podcasts like me, but not the number compared to a lot of other teams that have this going. So I'm happy that I can be that outlet for Wizards news, an entertaining podcast for that. And 50 episodes, it's not just another milestone. I'm very happy with it and happy with the growth. So again, thank you for listening to this episode, the 50th episode of the Wizards podcast. Here's to 50 more. Thank you for listening. Go Wiz.